We are holding an Erevin on page Chof, Ois Lamed Hei. We talked about the fact that after a person has drunk a certain amount of wine, he's not supposed to daven, and he has to sleep it off or walk it off or whatever. So now continuing on that topic of wine and how it muddles a person, Omer of Sheshes Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And by the way, Mishum, we've talked about before, doesn't mean he said it directly in his name. If Sheshes lived a couple hundred years after Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, means he heard it from in a chain that goes back to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Anyway, he says, Yochomi lifter skolaulam kulam in adin, I would be able to pater the entire world from judgment, in other words, to be able to be Malamed Schus on the Jewish people before Hashem to give an excuse that everybody should be free from punishment. From when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed until now, Shanema, you have a pasuk describing the time of Golus, Lochain. Therefore, the Navi says, after he's described all the things that have happened to the Jewish people and what's going to happen in the Asid Lavi, he says, Lochain, Shimi na Zois Ania, listen to this now, you poor one, Ushchuras V'loimi Yoyin, you who are drunk, but not from wine. In other words, so the Navi is using as a metaphor that Jewish people are Ke'ilu were drunk in Golus because of the hardships of Golus, as if like we've drunk wine and therefore we're not in our right mind. So therefore, so in other words, we're drunk, we're shogeg in Golos, and that's an excuse that can be used on behalf of the Jewish people. However, the Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction. The halacha is, a braisa says, shikr mikochen nekach umim korin nimker, a drunk person, and Marsha, by the way, adds the point, that when it says ania, the poor one, the point is that a rich person at least is used to drinking wine, so they know how to hold it. A poor person doesn't regularly drink wine, so then they drink some, and it goes to their head. So on the one hand, we're poor, on the other hand, we're being given wine to drink, and therefore we can't have kavanah properly. But Marsha adds, now the Gemara does say that elsewhere that when a person, actually it's going to say over here soon, that when a person reaches Shechrusa Shaloit, when a person reaches the stage of drunkenness of Loit, then he's parted from everything. But fine, Marsha says, we're not going to assume that even that in Golus we get to that bad state. So therefore the Gemara is going to ask that before a person reaches that state, to a certain extent, he still is chayav for what he does or doesn't do. So maybe shikur mekochen nekach, a drunk person, his sale is considered, his purchase is considered a valid purchase. Umimkorim mimker, his sales are considered a valid sale. And over avedah sheyesh b'misa mimisin osa, if he's over something which is chayiv misa, then they put him to death as long as there was hasra. You have over here, by the way, I don't know if you have in your print in mine, it says hoyu mimisin osa. That was actually changed by the censors. A lot of times whenever it talks about misa or malchus or whatever, and of course bati dinim don't have the power to do it, and the goyim didn't want them to, then they would change it to hoyu in past tense. But really it's mimisin osa. Malchus Malkinos. So if he's chayav Malchus, then they give him Malchus. Kolashal Dover. The general rule is, Hareo Kipiteach Bachal Dover. A drunk person is just like a regular, normal person. Elosh Potim and Atfila. The only thing is he's potter from davening because, as we said before, once he's drunk a revius of wine, then he can't concentrate. And even that, by the way, nowadays, a number of the dinim that we're going to have here in the Gemara about when he's not able to have kavana, many of them, it says in Shulchan Aruch, don't really apply nowadays because we anyway are not mechaven in davening as much as we should anyhow. So the one about drinking a revius of wine, the one about person being a shosser, you're a shikr, that, yeah, but other than that, a number of the other dinim, not really. But anyway, we see though that a shikur is chayiv in all mitzvahs. So what are you telling me then that Rav Sheshes is saying that I'd be able to give an excuse to pater all the Jewish people for everything they did wrong during the time of Golos? And the answer is you're right. My yecholim lichter nami dekamer. You know what? When Rav Sheshes says I would be able to pater everybody, he means midin tefillah. He means specifically if Hashem wants to judge the Jewish people harshly for the fact that we don't have kavanah and davening, then Rav Sheshes is saying for that we have a built-in excuse because we're drunk in Golos with the drunkenness, with the numbing wine of Golos. Throughout Tanakh, by the way, in many places, you have a poronus, punishment of a whole nation of the Jewish people and of the Goyish nations, and whatever. It was often talked about in terms of a marshal of drinking a cup of wine that makes a person numb and then muddled. So the same thing over here. We're saying that Golos has that effect on us, and therefore we're potter from the fact that we're not being mechaven and davening as much as we should. Okay. And the Gemara says, but with that said, I mean, of course, you know, we do have what the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya in many places, that nowadays our Ikar Avodah is supposed to be Avodah Satfila much more so than the Avodah of Talmud Torah, which they specialized in the prior generation. So as much as Rav Sheshes is saying we have an excuse, so we, you know, Alpi Chassidus, at least we shouldn't be using that excuse any more than necessary. Anyway, Omer Rav Chanina, Loi Shonu, Elo Shalei Gia L'Shichruse Shaloit. This din that was saying that a shikur is considered like a normal person to all purposes, as far as dinin mamanus and as far as dinin nefashas and all that, is only when he didn't reach the drunkenness of the degree of loit, where he b'chlal didn't know that night and on those two nights what was going on. But once a person reaches that point, potter mikulam, then he's potter from all of them, then he's considered like a shoita, and none of the dinim of mekach or memker, and none of the dinim of misa or malchus or anything like that apply to him. And for that matter, during a time like that, he also wouldn't be able to be yotze mitzvahs. For example, a person in that state of drunkenness eats matzah, let's say, or takes lulav or what have you, he won't be yotze for the same reason. He'll have to do it again when he sobers up. If he causes damage, so then Odom Mord La'olam, Ben Eir Ben Yashin, so then he would be, then the Pashas would be fired for that. Okay. V'omer Rav Chanina. Then Rav Chanina says another thing regarding this business of being careful not to daven when he's drunk. Hamefik Mogin Meshas Gaiva. A person who mefik, which he's going to explain, means that he removes Mogin, which is the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei, where the first bracha ends, Mogin Avraham, Bishas Gaiva, at a time when he feels Gaiva, when he's drunk. We know that when a person is drunk, they often feel very much full of themselves, much more than when they're sober. So when a person removes and does not daven Shemoneh Esrei, when he's drunk, Sogrin V'chosmin Tzores Babei, then Hashem closes up and locks away Tzores away from him. In other words, Hashem makes any tzaris that he would have deserved happen to him will not happen in the schus of that he's careful not to daven at a time like that. And he darshins this based on Shenemar, a posik in Iyov. Now the context of the posik, it's talking about the Luvyasan, it's talking about how powerful he is and how proud he is of his strength. And so the posik says, Gava afikim of ginim, Gava of So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like gava afike maginim, the pride of his strong shield, which is scales, sogu chos and tsar, they're closed and sealed very narrowly, like they're tightly one on top of the other, and they protect his body, and he's very proud of his strength because of those. But here Rav Chanina is dashing gava, when a person is feeling gaiva as a result of having drunk wine, afike. But then he holds back, as we said, Mefik, Moginim, the bracha of Mogin Avraham, Sogu, Choysam Tsar, then there's closed up and there's locked up the tsaris that would have otherwise come to him. So, my mashma dahai afik lishna da avurihu, where do we see the word afik means to remove? So, dichtiv, we have another pasuk from Iyov, where Iyov is complaining about how he thought his friends are going to help him, and now instead they're telling him off and then claiming that he did Averis and he deserves everything he got. And he uses the expression, Achai bogdu kamoy nochal, my brothers, meaning my friends, have betrayed me like a stream. Like, in other words, the metaphor is you come to a place where you expect there to be a stream of water and you find that the water is all dried up. And he says, "Kastik necholim yavuru." They've gone away, like when the stream goes away. So, in Mefarshim, the pasuk explained that afik means the strength, or it means like the word afike that we just had in the previous pasuk, or it means the stream bed or whatever. But here, the Gemara is understanding that it means they go away and they disappear like the stream. So we see that the word afik means to remove or to go away. So therefore, that yields Rav Chanina's derusha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan learns the drasha differently. He learns that rather the word mafik instead of meaning to remove, like Rav Chanina said, can mean to express. You actually have, for example, when we talk about a makik hay, literally that's what it is that the dot in that hay tells you to express the letter, for example, to actually sound it out rather than it should be silent. So therefore, Rabbi Yechon is saying, in the same vein, the word makik would mean to express. So if you want to say the drasha that a person is helped and Hashem saves him from troubles when he doesn't daven when he's drunk, then you need to say it the other way around. Kosha einu makik itmar. You should say when he doesn't express Mogin, the bracha of Mogin Avraham, and the rest of Shimon Asrei, when he's feeling the gaiva that he got from wine. In which case, my mashma dahi mapik lishin is galuyahu. In which case, where do we see the word mapik means to reveal something? Just give. In David's song, and in Shuin Sefer Shmuel, and in Tillim, by Yero Afike Yom, the Afike of the sea were seen, which means the sea was revealed. Yigolu Moistes, meaning the seabed, the ocean bed, Yigolu Moistes Tevel, the foundations of the world were revealed. So we see that Afike and Yigolu are parallel, so they both mean to reveal. So therefore, the drush has to be, if you don't reveal Mogin, in other words, you don't say the bracha when you're drunk, then you have the rest. So that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos explains that Tosfos brings from Rabbi Hanano, so that explains differently. We're not talking about Mogin Avraham. We're not talking about Shemana Esrei. What we mean is when a person feels that his Yetzirah is getting the better of him, is feeling a sense of gaiva and is strengthening itself over him, and Rav Chanina says that HaMefik, he removes it, he removes that protection and hides away and prevents his Yetzirah from overpowering him, then he has the reward that Sergim Lachos Mitzaris Badin. And Rav Yechanan says the other way around, if he doesn't cover it and prevent it, he reveals it and actually puts on armor and puts on a shield metaphorically and goes out to conquer and fight against the Yetzirah and to defeat it. So then that would be, Sogrim Lachos Mitzaris Badin. Marsha also adds, so then why, according to Rashi's explanation that we're talking about the bracha Mogin Avraham, then why is the drasha specifically focusing on that when you have 18 other brachas in Shemoneh Esrei? The reason is because essentially you have, the Gemara tells us that if a person is able at least to have kavana in the bracha of Avos, in that bracha ending with Mogin Avraham, then he should daven, and if not, then he should wait until he's able to have kavana. Again, we don't do that nowadays because anyway, we're not really going to be mechaven if we wait, but the point is, so therefore we're focusing more on Mogin Avraham and more than any other part of that. And then the Sogin, the Choisman, Tzaris Badei, Marshal goes on to say, meaning like this, there would be Makatrigim that would tell Hashem not to accept this tefillah, but like this, those Makatrigim are removed because now he is having Kavana and therefore there's nothing for them to be Makatrigim. So the Gemara says, Mechti, Kroi, Mashma, Kamar, Mashma, Kamar. Now let's consider this word Afike, which is the center of the Drasha over here. We're able to understand it either way. We can understand that we have a Pasuk that bears out what Rav Chanina is saying, that it can mean to remove. We have another Pasuk that bears out what Rav Yochanan is saying, that it means to reveal. And in fact, you have, by the way, in Lashon Kodesh, you have a number of words like that, which are, the word means the same thing and the opposite. For example, the word shoresh can mean to take root. It can also mean to uproot. And you have a number of other examples like that. Lahavdil in English, you have it, what? Pile and peel. Yeah, but you know, in English also, lahavdil, you have the word cleave, for example, means to cut apart, and it also means to join together. So languages are funny like that. Anyway, the point is, so the pasuk can be understood according to either one of them. My pligi. So what's the underlying argument? Why does Rav Chanina not want to learn the pasuk like Rav Yechanan and vice versa? The answer is b'dir of sheshes. They're arguing within what Rav Sheshes says. Rav Sheshes Moser Shinte V'Shamei. Rav Sheshes would give his sleep over to his Mishoris. In other words, they would after Rav Sheshes had drunk a little wine, he would go take a nap for a while, and he would tell his Mishamish, when it comes time for davening, wake me up. So Mar Isle did Rav Sheshes, and Mar Lesle did Rav Sheshes. So Rav Chanina, who focuses on the fact that you have to remove Mogin Avraham at a time of gaiva, he would disagree with that concept. He would say it won't work to daven Shemoneh Esrei until you wake up on your own. If you have your shamash wake you up, then it means you haven't necessarily slept off the effect of the wine yet. Don't be davening at that time. whereas Rabbi Yochanan would agree with Rabbi Sheshes' concept, and he would say that it's fine, kol she'enei matik itmar, he's saying when a person doesn't express the words of Shemana Esrei, when he feels gaiva, but in other words, he would say, once you have slept it off, even though you're having somebody else wake you, then that's good enough to daven Shemana Esrei. According to Tosfos, the explanation, the vote continuing from Rabbeinu Hananel, the vote would be that Rabbi Chanina would say, again, talking about, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, we're not talking about davening Shemana Esrei, but rather how a person should overcome his Yetzer Hara. So Rabbi Chanina says, the best thing is, go to sleep, then your Yetzer Hara won't bother you. Whereas Rabbi Chanina, and therefore he's saying, so don't even ask somebody to wake you up. Sleep as long as is necessary until that dissipates. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, yeah, but what happens if you miss the time of davening? Better you should go fight against the Yetzer Hara and then get rid of it, or go on a journey or something like that, and then you can daven. So therefore, he would say that, if you're gonna be sleeping, make sure you have somebody wake you up in time so you don't miss davening. Marsha also adds, we learned before, we said if you drink a revius of wine, then you need just a little bit of sleep. And if you drink more than a revius, then just the opposite. Sleep is just going to muddle you further. So what are we talking about over here? With the Shesha having his shamish wake him up, how is that going to work? So Marsha says, what it means is, in other words, so Rav Sheshes would estimate the amount of time that he needs to sober up after having drunk wine. He would tell the Mishores to wake him up at that time. So he would leave it to the Shamash to calculate. Based on how much Rav Sheshes had drunk, he would tell him, you figure out how long I need to sleep in order for the effect to go away. So Rav Chanina says, that's not really good enough. You can't really rely on that. When you wake up yourself, then we know it's gone away. As opposed to Rav Yochanan is going to say, like Rav Sheshes, that's fine. More on this topic of not davening when a person is not in the frame of mind for it. When a person is not feeling calm and collected, then he should not daven. Again, this is one of those halachas that we don't really apply nowadays, because then we would never daven if it was like that. But shenemar, as the pasuk says, batsar al yoga. In a time of trouble, he should not yoda. Now, yoda, on the face of it, means the paskin halacha. There are, in fact, Rishonim who have a gusa instead, yodeh, meloshen hoidah. But even yodeh would also mean, like, to express gratitude to Hashem. Now, there's no such pasuk in Tanakh, Rashi says. So Rashi says maybe it's in Sefer Ben Sira. We've talked about Sefer Ben Sira before. It's a Sefer that was written early in the time of the Second Bais Mikdash. The author was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He wrote a Sefer over there very much in the style of Sefer Mishlei, with advice for life and praise of the Chachamim and various things. And Rashi says, so maybe this pasuk is in there. Tosfos gives a different explanation. Tosfos says, never mind Sefer Ben Sira. So in that case, according to Rashi, then we would have to say that the Gemara, even though the Gemara elsewhere explains that Sefer Ben Sira is, of course, not part of Tanakh, and even in Sanhedrin, the Gemara has opinions of Amiroyim that you're not even supposed to be reading it at all, but here we have it the opposite, where the Gemara would be quoting a phrase from it as though it was a pasuk. Anyway, Tosfos says, no, it has nothing to do with Sefer Ben Sira, it's rather, and we're taking that pasuk that we darshan before, agava afikim aginim sogu choisim tsar, and using the word tsar in a different sense. When the person is feeling tsar, then sogu choisim, then he should close up and seal up his davening and not, this is Marsha says that. Marsha says that we could be darshaning it from that. It doesn't have to be from Sefer Ben Sira. Tosfos rather says that what we're doing, it is true that sometimes the Gemara does quote things from Ben Sira as though they're psukim from Tanakh. But here, not necessarily, he says that, what it is actually, we're darshaning from an actual pasuk in Tanakh, and Tosfos gives a couple of possibilities. Maybe it's the pasuk that we said before, Shchuras V'lo Miyoyin, that was saying as long as a person is feeling the drunkenness and the hardships of Golus, then he shouldn't daven. Or maybe another pasuk from Iyov, Hayar Shuach Haloy Batzar. So it could be that comes from there. There is a very interesting thing that's brought that some Talmid Chacham from Morocco in the 17th century writes that he saw by another Talmid Chacham there in Morocco, he saw what the person had, Sefer Nevuas Achia Hashiloi. So we know from Tanakh that Achi Ashilani wrote his Nevuas, most of the Nevi'im did. However, we don't have that sefer, just like we don't have in general any of the Sfarim that were written in the times of Tanakh that didn't actually make it into Tanakh. However, this Rav over there had something which was claimed to be sefer Achi Ashilani, and there was this line in there about Sar al Yoyra. So in that case, it may not be from Sefer Ben Sira, but it may be from this other sefer which is also outside of Tanakh. Another possibility they bring up, it's interesting because they also... There's also somebody who claimed that that a Jewish community pretty much at the other end of the world in India, in Cochin, India, also had the Sefer Nevuas Achi Ashilani, although it seems that the person who claimed that may have falsified the claim. Anyway, another thing they say actually is, so Sefer Ben Sira was originally written in Lashon Kodesh or in Aramaic. The original of it was lost because it wasn't included in Tanakh and because the Chachamim discouraged reading it. At some point, it was translated into Greek, and for hundreds of years, that was all that was available. The Goyim had it, the Jews didn't, which is why Rashi is saying maybe it's in Sefer Ben Sira, because he had no access to the original. Eventually, they found parts of it in the Cairo Gnuza, and they found one which can be translated in Lashon Kodesh as Batsar al-Yoideh. So in that case, then that may bear out, after all, what Rashi is saying, that the Gemara is quoting over here a pasuk from Ben Sira as though it was a pasuk from Tanakh. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Similarly, Rav Chanina, b'yom de rosach lo matzli. Rav Chanina would not daven on a day when he got angry. Because I'm about Sarah Yoriksiv. Same thing. The pasuk is saying you shouldn't daven when you're feeling trouble. And since I'm feeling trouble and I'm not in my right mind, then I'm not going to be able to daven. Then Yehoyada says, okay, it doesn't mean he's not davening at all that day. Maybe it means that usually he would daven a Tfilas Nedava, and today he's not going to do that. Because a Tfilas Nedava, you need to have to be in the proper frame of mind for it. Similarly, Ma'ukva, B'yom Yedishusa, Le'nafet Medina, Ma'ukva would not go out to a Din Torah. Ma'ukva was the Dayan in his community, but he would not go out to judge Din Torah on a day when the south wind is blowing. The Gemara mentions in various places that the south wind is a very strong, harsh wind, and it brings coldness, and then therefore, so it would be uncomfortable, and therefore he wouldn't feel in the proper frame of mind to have the clearness of mind to judge a din Torah on such a day. And similarly, Omer of Nachman Yitzchak, Sricha Shmaita Tzilusa Kiyeme De Astana. In fact, to learn Torah properly needs a clearness of mind like a day when the north wind blows. So the north wind, the Gemara mentions in various places, a very gentle wind, it clears away the clouds. So therefore, that's a good day. So that's the kind of frame of mind that a person should be in. So Maharsha explains, according to Rashi, it would seem that Reb Nachman Yitzchok is saying you need a day with that kind of weather in order to learn properly, but maybe not necessarily. Maybe it means, in other words, that the same way as the sky is clear on a day when that north wind blows, the same way you need a completely clear mind in order to learn Torah properly. And in this vein, Amar Abaya, I Amra Li'en, Koriv Kutcha, if my mother, and it wasn't really his mother, it was his foster mother, because his mother passed away in childbirth, if she would tell me, bring me the Kutach, which is a dip that they ate their food with in Babel, so that would be enough to distract me. Loi Tanoi, I wouldn't be able to learn properly that day, because even though it's such a minor task, but nevertheless it would distract him from the total concentration that he needs in learning. You have al derech like that. There's a musadik of work that's brought in connection. You know, you have the story of Rabbi Akiva, where he goes away and learns for 12 years in Beis Medrash, and then he comes back home and he's about to go in, and then he overhears Rachel talking with a neighbor and saying, you know, if I had my way, he'd learn for another 12 years, and he turns right back and goes back to the Beis Medrash. Why doesn't he come in at least first, say hello to her or whatever? So there's a vote on it from one of the Balei Musar that relating to this Gemara over here, that little interruption would mean, in effect, that now when he starts the next 12 years, it wouldn't be a continuation of the before. It would be a whole new thing, and it wouldn't allow him to reach the high level that he could. So therefore, he knew there needs to be no interruption. See, here Abaye is making the same point. This is Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, I think, said this. Yes. Similarly, Omer Ravino Rava, he kratz dankina loitanoi. Similarly, he says, if a louse bites me, then that also would distract me and I wouldn't be able to learn properly. Or the Marshal has a different explanation. He says it means if I had to kill a louse, it would bother me so much having to kill it that even though it's a tiny little creature or whatever, that it would distract me from learning. And in that connection, in order to avoid lice, Marbre de Ravina, Abdullah Ima, Shiva Yulavushi, Lushiva Yoyim. For that reason, Ma Brejan Avina's mother made him 7 outfits for the 7 days of the week. This way, in other words, each day he could change his outfit, and this way he's less likely to have lice, and therefore he would have as little distraction as possible from his learning, so that he could become the great Talmid Chacham that he did. Okay. On to Yechezkel now. We are holding in Yechezkel, Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beit. So now, throughout the whole Perek, Yechezkel has been inside the Heichal, and the Malach has been showing them around over there. So now, Pasuk Chaf Beit. So in the previous Pasuk, he described the doorposts of the Heichal and the entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or some of the Mephoshim explain that with the words of Pnei Kodesh, Hamara Kamara in the previous Pasuk referred to the Menorah. So now he's going to talk about another item of furniture that was in the Heichal. Hamizbeach. Now, the problem is that he begins the pasuk by saying HaMizbeach, but he ends off Zeh Shulchan HaShel Lefnei Hashem. So what is he referring to? Is he talking about the Mizbeach HaZahav, or is he talking about the Shulchan? And why the inconsistency? So we'll learn the pasuk first, and then we'll talk about what the different Mephoshim say. HaMizbeach Eitz, the Mizbeach is made out of wood. Shalosh Amos Gavoya, it's 3 Amos tall, but Orko Shtayim Amos, the length of it is 2 Amos, Umikta Oistav Loi, the corners of it, meaning the various parts that stick out of it, Loi, are all made out of one piece with it, but Orko Vikud Oistav Eitz, and the length of it and the walls of it are made of wood. By Dabar Eli, and the Malach spoke to me, and he said, Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem, this is the table that is before Hashem. So Rashi brings from Targum Yonason that he is talking about the Shulchan. So why does he say HaMizbeach? Because he means the Shulchan, which is near the Mizbeach. Because in the Kodesh, you have the Menorah, you have the Shulchan, and you have the Mizbeach HaZahav. So the Shulchan is fairly close to the Mizbeach HaZahav. So therefore, when he says HaMizbeach, he means the Shulchan, which is near the Mizbeach. So that's what some of the other Mephoshim answer. Then the Gemara explains, the Gemara in Brachas that says in that case, then why is he calling it HaMizbeach at the beginning, and then instead of just calling it flat out the Shulchan, it teaches us that a person's Shulchan is Mechaper for him nowadays when there's no Mizbeach, because a person eats at his table and has Machnas Orchim and says Dibrei Torah by the table or whatever, so it's Mechaper for him like a Mizbeach. So according to that, then the Shalosh Amos Gavoya would mean the complete height of the table, the pashtus including the side frames over there that held the lechem upon him on the sides, because the actual Shulchan itself is described in the Torah as only 2 Amos tall. The Orkish Shtayim Amos that you have, it says in the Pesukim, in Parshas Truma, it says that it's 1.5 Amos tall. So here the 3 Amos would the pashtus include the side frames there as well. The length is 2 amos, like it says there in the pasuk. Umuktsa'oisav then would be all the various parts, the legs and the top of the table and so forth. Rashi says muktsa'oisav means gufa shulchan, the actual body of the table itself. It's not made out of 2 pieces. The top of the table is made out of 1 piece. But okay, the kiroisav eitz, the kiroisav in particular would be the misgeras that's described over there in the Pesukim in Parshas Truma, that you had a frame going around the Shulchan with the machlokas in the nachas, whether the frame was above the tabletop or below it. Anyway, so it was all made out of wood. In Pesukim, it's described, it was plated with gold, but here, just like he did with the walls, he's only describing the wood and not the gold plating. That's all according to Rashi. On the other hand, the Radak brings an explanation that it does mean the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and in that case, then yeah, he's calling it Shulchan, because like you said, the Mizbeach is, so to speak, Hashem's table. We find other Pesukim that use the same metaphor. Malachi, for example, says that you had people in his time, the early second Beis Mikdash, who were treating the Korbanos disrespectfully, and they use the expression, for example, Shulchan Hashem Nivzahu. So we see that Hashem, that the Mizbeach can be called Hashem's Shulchan. You have in the Gemara, you have the Gemara that the Kohenim eat Mishulchan Gavoya Kazahu and other such expressions. So it can mean that instead. In that case, then it would mean that it's a Sholosh Amos Gavoya, it's 3 Amos tall, which is the same size as the Mizbeach HaZahav was in the Mishkan. So the one in the Mishkan was the one in the Mishkan was one by one hammer. Here it's twice the size in each direction. Only Oisav, then the corners would mean the kronos are made out of one piece with it instead of being nailed on afterwards. But okay, because Oisav eight and the length and then all the walls of it are made out of wood. Okay. Then he continues. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Ushtayim Vlosis LaHeichel VaLaKodesh. The Heichel and the Kodesh had two sets of doors. So now we have the diagram that I pasted up there on top where I blew up the area, when you're going into the Heichel. At the bottom over there, the wide area on the bottom is the Ula, is part of the Ulam. Then you have two sets of doors, according to two different opinions, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda in Mishnayis and Midas. And then above that, above the doors, you're going into the Heichel itself. So now, he had two sets of doors to go into the Heichel. And Pasuk Chav Dalet, and then we'll talk about after that how the doors were arranged. Ushtayim Dlosis Ladlosis. Each door has actually two doors. Ushtayim Musabis Dlosis. There are two doors that swing. There's two doors for one and two doors for the other. Now, you have in Mishnayis Midas, when I talk about the second Beis Mikdash, you have a Machloikas of the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. And that Machloikas it actually refers to over here, so it applies to the third Beis Mikdash as well. The Tanakhama holds that it means each set of doors is made of two doors. You have an entryway 10 amos wide, and then it opens into the Heichel, which is 20 amos wide. So you have a 10 amos wide entranceway. Each of the doors is 5 amos wide. So you have one, you have the inner set of doors, you have 5 and 5. The outer set of doors, you also have 5 and 5. So in the morning, the Kohen comes and opens the doors. What happens is then the bottom set of doors, the ones that are further out towards the outside, those swing 90 degrees and they fold up flat and they go flat against the wall, against that vertical wall over there between the doors. Those doors are set in one amma from the edge of the wall. So you have, here's the edge of the wall, and they're set in one amma. So now you have, when you close them, they go flush against the wall, and you have 5 ammas of that 6 amma wall covered with each of those doors, one on each side. And then the ones on top, as the Tanakhama says, swing 180 degrees and go and lie flat against the wall on the side of each one of them. So therefore, the Tanakhama says, when we talked yesterday, that the Heichel was plated with gold all around, those areas were not plated with gold, because anyway, during the daytime, when people are going in and out of the Heichel, then those areas are going to be covered by the doors anyway. That's the Tanakhama. Then Rabbi Yehuda holds and especially he mentions in the Mishnah, he focuses on the words where you have over here, Shtayim Delos Echos, Ushtei Delosis La'acheres. He explains that each door itself is made of two parts. They're folding doors, he says. So each door, it has two folding panels. The panels are each 2.5 amas wide. So 2.5 times 4 equals 10. So there's your 10 amma width. So therefore, so you have the inner doors and the outer doors. Each of them is a pair of folding doors. And when you open them, you close them against the wall over there between the doors. So only that wall is covered by the doors, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the wall on the wall inside the Heichel, according to him, is not. So each one of them explains these psukim chav gimel and chav dalet according to their own shita in that regard. Then he continues, pasuk chav hei, va'asuya alehen el dalsas ha-heichel, there was designed on them, on these doors of the heichel, kruvim v'simorim, the images of kruvim and palm trees, like we learned yesterday, they had all over the walls, kasher asuya makiris, exactly as there are on the walls, and also, Yechezkel describes, there's another thing he saw, va'ov eitz el pnei ha'ulam, me'achut, there's also a thick wooden beam on the front of the ulam from the outside. So now you have like this. The ulam is 10 amos wide, and you have a wall of 5 amos, and then a space, and then another wall of 2 or 3 amos thick. The problem is, those walls of the ulam are very tall. Now, the walls of the Heichel, we learn in Mishnayis Midas, and apparently it's going to be the same in the third Beis Mikdash, you had a ground floor, and then above it, you had a second floor. So therefore, each individual segment of wall is not so tall, it's made thick enough, it won't collapse. The Ulam, though, doesn't have a second floor like that. The whole thing is 100 amas tall, and you have a problem. Walls that tall are going to collapse. So therefore, so in the second Beis Mikdash they had, and now Yechezkel is describing, in the third Beis Mikdash, they will also have a thick beam that runs from the front of the, that runs from the front of the Ulam to the back of it in order to hold the wall steady and keep it above. So here's the Ulam over here. So in other words, you have up above, you have a thick beam going from here to here and from here to here, and maybe also in here as well, to keep the walls steady and keep them from buckling. Here's one of the diagrams that I had before with the hayfel blown up so that you can see it a little more clearly. Here's the ulam over here. So you have this of eight is above your head from here to here and from here to here to keep the walls steady. Then he continues. By the way, the Rambam brings in Hilchos Beis HaBechir that you're not supposed to have exposed wood anywhere in the Beis Mikdash, so the Rambam would have to understand that this wood was plated with gold or covered with something else, so you're not over on that. Then he continues, Pasuk Chavav, V'chalonim atumos v'simorim mipoyim mipoy al kisfes ha'olam. On the sides of the olam, the two sides of the doorway, you also have the chalonim atumos, like he described previously, the windows that are narrower on the inside and wider on the outside. And we learned before, according to Mitzvot David, also, they're glazed with glass. You have those also on the sides of the olam, on the sides of the doorway going in and out. The tsalos habayis v'ha'ubim. In addition, he also sees the tsalos of the house and the ubim. Now, previously, throughout much of this perek, we use the word tsalos to mean the toyim, those little rooms all around the heichal. Here, we're using tsalos in a different sense. The basic meaning of tsalos is ribs. So it can be used of any kind of side thing. Here, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Baba Basra that says like this: When you're building a building. So you have the walls are made out of brick or stone or whatever. In the case of this mikdash, they're made out of stone. But then you have beams. You have wooden beams that are going to be used to hold up the ceiling. And if there's another floor above it, then they're going to hold up the floor above it. So what do you put those beams on? You don't put them directly on the stone or the brick. The pasture is because over time, moisture from it would get into the wood and ruin it. So instead, what you do is, you have what the Gemara calls maltasin, which is a very thick wooden beam that you put on top of the stone wall along the length of it. Then you have on top of that, you put the morishin, which are the heavy beams, the heavy joists that hold up the ceiling. So you have a wall over here. On top of it, you have maltis. On top of it, you have a maltis. And then 90 degrees to that, you have the morishin, the thick wooden beams that hold up the ceiling. So now Rashi says, that's what, so now the Gemara says, and Rashi brings that Salos Habayis refers to that first thing, the Maltasin, on the top of the wall, and Ha'ubim means the Marishin, means the thick beams that hold up the actual ceiling. So he was shown all of that as well in the Heichel of the third Beis Mikdash. Yem Yem Mashiach Gola, Aleph Rashodesh Av. Shodesh Menachem, that is. Birkas Koyanim, the Koyanim would say it on the Duchan in the Beis Mikdash, and a few further on in Perek Mem Beis, we'll talk briefly about the Duchan in the third Beis Mikdash. And nowadays, of course, the Koyanim also bench the Jewish people with it, but there's an important difference. In the Beis Mikdash, they said it with the Shem HaMeforesh, like Shem Shani Nichtav Kachani Nikra, whereas nowadays we have to say it and it's written as Shem Adam. But in the time of the Gola, the Kohenim will once again say the bracha with the Shema HaMeforesh, the Samuas Shmi, that they'll bless us with the Shema HaMeforesh. Halacha, continuing on halachas of travel. So in earlier simonim, he talked about dinim of what happens if you're traveling and can't find water and you don't have water to wash for bread. You also have dinim about under what circumstances are you allowed. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, explains in Seder's and Chavos Yedayim that with bread there's no heter to eat it without washing, not even by wrapping your hands in a cloth or putting on gloves. He says maybe if you can't find water anywhere within 4 mil, then you have a certain heter for it. But even then, amach metovah el abracha, he says at the end of it there. You also have dinim as far as that when you eat, you're not allowed to move from your place until you bench. So that's relevant when you're traveling. You also have the din that you have to bench and say alamichya for that matter as well when you're sitting. So all of those are relevant things to keep in mind when you're traveling. You can't just eat and run. If though you're walking and eating while you're walking, then you are actually allowed to say birkas hamazon while you're walking, because then if you have to delay, then you're not really going to feel so daitim yosheva solo. You're not going to really feel so comfortable, and you won't be able to concentrate on benching. But if you ate sitting, then birkas hamazon you have to say sitting as well. Not everybody even knows about the idea that you have to say alamichya sitting down. A few years back, actually, the Elzebub Zalzayin Gazon pointed it out to me, and it's a black letter law in Shulchan Aruch. Rav Chanan ben Akasha, Matzah, Pachbrochel, Zach.